You're listening to episode 93 of 88 Cups of Tea with Yin Chang.
Am I doing this right? Hi, I'm your host, Yin Chang, and thanks for joining me on 88 Cups of Tea. This podcast is created to leave you feeling motivated from interviews with storytellers, where we learn how they create opportunities for a successful career without losing sight of the values that make us human. Whew, that was a really long run-on sentence.
Hey, what's up, Storyteller Tribe? Hello from Vancouver. We're so excited to be here for my dear friend Natalie's wedding, which so happens to take place on Canada Day. If you have any local food spots or tea shops to recommend, please let me know on Twitter at 88 Cups of Tea. Before I get into the details about today's guest, I wanted to thank Overdrive for supporting our show. I'm totally geeking out about having them as a sponsor for today's new episode. I've been a fan of theirs for 6 years, and I'm so honored to share the exciting news about their brand new app called Libby. It's designed for readers to discover and enjoy ebooks and audiobooks from your library. I have way more amazing details to share with you, so please be sure to hang around at the end of the show. I'd also love to wish Amanda Christie Connolly from our community a very happy birthday. May all of your dreams and wishes come true. We have Erin Chack in today's new episode. Erin is a senior editor at BuzzFeed and the author of This Is Really Happening, a profoundly transparent collection of essays written in a sharply observant voice that's refreshingly candid. Erin describes her book as an essay collection about the best, the worst, and the weirdest moments of her life so far. We kick off our discussion by talking about how Erin uses comedy to point out the realities of life. She also shares a story of a life-changing email that paved the way to writing her memoir. Further into our conversation, we unpack why it's crucial for memoir writers to write with honesty and confidence, and how to prevent self-doubt from holding you back in telling your story. We also talk about the steps Erin took to hone her craft of writing. I am so excited for you to hear this episode. Erin is one of those down-to-earth and honest people you immediately want to become fast friends with after meeting for the first time. I can't wait for you to have a new friend crush after hearing her episode. Now let's jump right in. Hey everyone, we have Erin Chack with us. I know a lot of you have been loving her book, This Is Really Happening. It's a collection of essays about her life, about growing up, being in love, being sick and overcoming it, and moving on in life. Erin, I'm so excited to have you here. How are you?
Yes, I'm so good. I'm so excited to be here. It's so good to talk to you.
I'm so excited. So are you in New York as well?
I am. I'm in Union Square right now.
Union Square. Dude, Max Brenner's. That place was so fun just to grab dessert, but I can't do that anymore. My body just can't function with all that chocolate and the chocolate pizzas and all that stuff.
Yeah, and where are you right now? Are you nearby?
I am in Long Island right now. I was born in the city, grew up a little bit in Flushing, Queens, and then raised in Long Island most of my life, and then moved out to LA, then San Diego, and I'm back visiting in New York. So I'm all over the place. You were born and raised in New Jersey.
Yeah, but I live in Queens now, so we have same space, different time overlap.
I was going to say, you're in Astoria. My girlfriend discovered this awesome bagel spot there.
Please tell me about it.
Brooklyn Bagel and Coffee Company.
Oh, yeah, of course. There's a couple, I think.
There's two spots in Astoria. There's one on Broadway and one on 30th Ave. And there's another one, I think, in Chelsea. Whenever we're visiting New York from LA or San Diego, we just straight up go to Brooklyn Bagel and Coffee Company. And I go to the one on 30th Ave because they have a bathroom there. The one in Broadway does not. But yo, those bagels are so good.
You're inspiring this new love inside my chest. I'm like, I haven't been going there enough. I've gone twice, maybe.
You need to go more often because you know they're famous for their cream cheese. They have new flavors each week.
Oh, no, I didn't even realize. Every time I go, I just get the same thing. Everything bagel with plain cream cheese. So I'll have to try something new.
I do too.
Yay, bagel twins.
I love it because their bagels are soft in the center and they're known to have the crispy outsides. But I love the chewy center. It's so good. When I read that you're from Astoria, I'm like, yes, she's from my Brooklyn spot. Yes. I was so happy. How are you liking Astoria compared to Jersey?
Oh, yeah. It's such a different vibe. I mean, I grew up in like suburbia and Astoria has a little bit more of a city feel, which I think if you grew up in Manhattan, you probably feel Astoria is a suburbs. But for me, it's definitely a step up. I live near the park. I love to run on the track or like go for a walk against the river. I really like it there. We've been there 4 years and I don't think we don't have any plans to move or anything. So it might be another 4 years.
I have a really good friend who lives in Astoria still. And I don't remember where exactly, but I remember there was a really good Middle Eastern joint right around the block from her. But I went to visit her 2 or 3 times there. And the community that she was living in, the neighbors were all super nice.
nice. It's different from the city. People don't really take the time to ask you how your day is. Not everybody in the city, but Astoria gave you that feel of more of a family vibe. I do gravitate towards Astoria, so I think that's awesome that you live there. I'm kind of jealous. I have to say, I have been checking out your Instagram, and I freaking love your posts. I'm slightly jealous that I was not the one to come up with that brilliant photo of you giving birth to your book.
Oh,
that is so genius. She's so awesome. Listeners listening in, please, you got to check out Erin's account. It's Erin.Chack, right? On Instagram?
It is. Somebody has Erin Chack without the period, and I think her name is Erin C. Hack, and I want that account so badly, but I can't.
Got to message her privately. Listeners, please check out Erin's Instagram post. It's definitely worthy of following. She has some funny stuff up there, including your Twitter. Also, happy belated birthday to your boys.
I see they're
Gemini babies. Your cat turned 20, which is freaking awesome. Ashes.
Oh my God, I can't believe you know that. So cool. Yeah, he's older than Kylie Jenner, which is amazing.
Obviously, way wiser. And Sean, he turned a pretty big number too. What was it, June 9th?
Yes.
My girlfriend's mom, her birthday is today, so she's also a Gemini. So it's a good month for kids to be born in, and I think they're pretty awesome people.
Yeah, I like to think so too.
You writing about Sean and describing him as who he is, he's become his own type of superhero. I can see so many people reading your book love him. Obviously, they're in love with you, number one, but Sean is just another one. And you did such an amazing way describing everyone in your stories, from family to friends to the love of your life. I'd love to jump in and talk about your book.
Let's do it.
First of all, I love memoirs, and I think you do such a beautiful job writing about the realities of life and also heartbreak and also sad parts about life, underlaying it with comedy, allowing you to realize, hey, this is life. Also, I have to preface it in case listeners are not aware, and everyone who hasn't checked it out yet, you have to check it out. There's this one line that I love, and it's already making its way around the internet. So I'm pretty sure people have seen the line, and it's sweet to think that the most of us don't want to go. Like, life is a party that's too fun to leave. How lucky we are to even be invited. Holy shit, I was crying. Girl,
no way.
You made me cry. So I mean, I'm like, Erin, stop it right now. You're pulling with my heartstrings. The things that you say are so poignant and just so wise as well. I want to know, who's your role models growing up? If you read certain essayists' works that really changed your opinion and perspective about what a writer's voice can be like, and if you've read anyone's work which made you feel empowered.
I was a high school student when Bossy Pants came out by Tina Fey, I think I was in college now, I'm remembering. That was the first time that I read an essay collection, I think, that I can remember by a woman, because before that I was really into David Sedaris, Chuck Klosterman, which is super masculine writing. And even though I enjoyed it, I really felt at home once I started reading Tina Fey's essay collection, and then later Amy Poehler's essay collection. You got Mindy Kaling in there. I think we love the work they do in terms of television and movies. At the heart of what they do is, like, they're incredible writers. So to get to just sit down with them and listen at their knee, their incredible stories, unfiltered through fiction, is, like, incredible. And those were the first essays that really got my heart racing. Like, oh my God, I think I want to do this one day.
So when you read their works, you're like, okay, one day I'd like to write like this. But then what did you do to hone your voice to then be what it is today? You clearly have a very distinct voice, which I love. We need more voices like yours out there, especially to empower young women. Do you remember what was that transition where you're, okay, you know what? I'm going to take this a step more seriously. Did you throw yourself in workshops, classes, or if you took a writing class in college or something that really helped you hone your craft?
For sure. If I look back over how I got here, I can see the dots connecting, but at the time, I did not realize they were dots. In high school, I took a ton of creative writing courses. And then when I got to college, I had a lot of self-doubt that creative writing courses were for people who knew they were going to write a book one day. And I was more toying with the idea of wanting to do that because my major was journalism. But I remember being, oh, I feel like those classes aren't for me. And then my best friend Elijah saying, you should apply to be in these classes. Because a lot of them, you had to audition with a short story or a small sample writing. At her urging, I tried it and we both got in. And then I met my friend Jackson in that class, and then the three of us became a little writing crew, passing stories back and forth. But then when I graduated, I didn't pursue creative writing. I went with the journalism and got a job at BuzzFeed. Not that what we do is like strict journalism, but it's not creative writing either. One thing that I can see when I look back on how I got here is so much self-doubt And even when I first started writing at BuzzFeed, I felt there were things I was allowed to write about, but there were things that I wasn't allowed to touch. I could write funny lists with a lot of pictures, but I shouldn't put too much writing in them because that's for better writers. After being on the internet for 2 years, just being like, you know what? I'm going to write what I want to write. And then trying that and getting a little bit of a response and then getting a little bit more confidence and writing as much as I can now. At this point, I'm not afraid to make an entire post that's just words. Sounds nice. Silly, but at first it was a scary thing to do. One thing that helped me have the confidence to write the book was trusting my voice on the internet, getting to a point where I was, okay, I don't care if I'm not the greatest writer who ever lived. I still like to write and I like deserve to write what I feel.
I get that. And I feel like when you're like, I may not be the best writer to live, there's something that shouted out at me. I felt like saying, you're the most honest writer. I think that's so much more important. What is the greatest? That's definitely dependent on people's opinions. For me, I think honesty is what makes a writer really great and beyond great. I had to throw that in there and throw those compliments and say that I love your honesty. And I think that is what attracts me to your work. It's fucking hilarious. What was the BuzzFeed article where you posted about not being ladylike? Oh, 21 signs being ladylike is not your forte. Oh my God. Girl, you are my kindred spirit. Yes. I don't understand purses.
Same.
Especially wristlets. My mom got me a wristlet, so I was wearing it just in honor of my mom. But I left that wristlet at a fish taco joint that I love about 4 to 5 times. And I'm like, I need to attach this and glue this somehow or just have those shoulder straps so it stays on my body. There's that one image that you chose. Model struggling with heels down the catwalk.
Oh, yeah.
That is my ass with high heels. I cannot even deal with that. I need platforms or something at the very minimum. Your voice is so strong and just so different, especially for our generation. It's very refreshing. I mentioned before, and I'm going to say it again, we need more of that out there. Do you mind giving listeners who may not have had a chance to pick up your book just yet your own version of a screenshot of what they can expect from your collection of essays?
Sure. This Is Really Happening is an essay collection, first and foremost. It's not a traditional linear memoir. In it, there's first kisses, there's young love, there's road trips, there's cancer diagnoses, more than one. There's a lot of peeing for some reason. Yes. There's more than one story about me peeing on something.
Amazing.
But mostly it's just about growing up and stumbling around, not knowing what is going on, but knowing that you have to always move forward. And that's what growing up is. You don't know what you're doing, but you got to keep moving.
Who first inspired you, or what first inspired you to want to put this together in a book? Because I know you mentioned before that you grew more confident as you started putting out more pieces with lengthier content, and that shaped you to where you are right now. Do you remember that catalyst where you're like, you know what? I should just put this together in a book.
Yeah, absolutely. When my boyfriend Sean and I hit our 10-year anniversary, I wrote him a public love letter on BuzzFeed that was called The 10 Times I Knew I Loved You. In it was The 10 Times I Knew I Loved You. Each one was about one paragraph long. I think the entire thing was only 2,000 words, but it got a really amazing response. And I think the reason why people liked it was because I was writing it for him. And there was a lot of honesty there because I didn't think a lot of people were going to see it. There's this thing you can do on BuzzFeed where you can post an article or a post and it doesn't get promoted to the site. So I had assumed I would just send it to him privately, but it started getting some views and they put it on the homepage and it kind of blew up. Then an editor from Razorbill, which is an imprint of Penguin Random House, read the essay and said, I think that each of these moments are so beautiful. And I think we could really pull out each paragraph to be essay length and can talk about making this a full book, which was my dream since I was born.
Congratulations. Very, very late one, but that's amazing. What?
Today's actually Sean and my anniversary, but it's our 12-year anniversary now.
Another congratulations to you both. You. Walk us through and like relive this moment with us. You got an email, I'm assuming, or was it like a private DM? Were you like, is this for real? And you double check that their email ends in razorbill.com or like penguinrandomhouse.com.
Absolutely. I swear to God, I didn't believe it for about a week. I was on vacation with my family and I just remember reading it and going, I'm sure this is literally nothing. Like I'm just 100% sure it's too good to be true. And then I called my creative writing professor, who's like a mentor to me, and I was like, what do you think about this? Like, this is fishy. And he was, Erin, I think she's asking you to write a book. And I was like, oh, shit. Okay, I think I'll hit her back. And then now she's a lifelong friend, my editor, Tiffany Liao, who's no longer with Penguin. I'm so grateful to her because I really think she just liked my writing. If she didn't like my writing, I wouldn't have a book. You know what I'm saying?
Wow. Okay, so it's her intuition. So something that spoke to her about your work. She fought for you.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it was all on her back. She came to me and then they made it happen.
I believe you're the first
memoirist on our show. It just hit me right now.
Breaking barriers.
Yes! How much of a hand did she have in shaping the direction of your book? Because you mentioned it's not really linear, it's different chapters, and your stories, you can pluck out any chapter, any essay, and you don't have to read it in order. That's how I read it. So for her, did she have a heavy say in how you should present your essays for each part of the book? Or was that, all right, Erin, you should write this book and go?
I feel like it was such a team effort, honestly, and I'm so grateful to have had her. I was dealing with a lot of self-doubt again when we started working on this project, where I'm not a person who is famous. I don't have a following. Why should anybody care about my story was like a thing that kept going through my head. She was so important in reminding me that that's not what's important when it comes to storytelling. It's about the journey and the way that people can relate to the story, and the fact that I'm not Tina Fey shouldn't discourage me from wanting to explain what has happened to me in my young life. And then because of that self-doubt, I think I also had trouble understanding which stories were worthy of going in. So a lot of us working together, like us going to cafes around New York and her being, did you ever pee your pants? Did you ever kiss a boy when you were young? How did you meet your best friend? And then her giving me those little seeds of inspiration, and then I would go home and write 5,000 words on it. Then there was a lot of editing too, because some stories we thought, oh, this will be interesting. And then it's like, actually, there's not much here. So we had to cut a few. I really feel like it was such a team effort.
I love that you shared that story. One of our listeners I worked with on a film, and she's actually a friend that became a listener. She just recently decided, I think she announced yesterday in our private Facebook group, that she would love to write her own memoir. What's the advice that you can pass on to her? Because I know that you thankfully had your editor walking you through in basically emotional and psychological support.
Yeah, so much.
Your stories are worth it. Don't feel self-doubt at all. So if there's something you can pass to Carlise, our listener, do you have anything to share with her so that she can have that confidence as well?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I would say to Carlise that, first of all, I think my biggest mistake was ever thinking that my stories aren't worth telling. That's like, first of all, like factually inaccurate. Second of all, if you read any other memoir, David Sedaris, for example, wasn't a famous person when he started writing his essay collections. There are a ton of essays that are just about him being 7 and like his relationship with his mom. The thing that he does so well is he finds humor in the situations and he finds truth in the situations. Not saying that her memoir needs to be humorous, but if there's one thing you need to make sure you're doing, it's just being honest, being truthful, and thinking how your story could relate or inspire somebody else. Definitely just start writing, because there's no reason to not just dive right in. I feel so fortunate that I had an editor who kickstarted the project. I know now that it's all over that I could have done this myself if I had had the confidence to do it. Just have the confidence to do it. Just start writing. Start telling your story and pass it to some first readers who could take a look and help you stay on target and mold it. Literally get your hands dirty.
Thank you for that. I think that was really some real talk. You mentioned about journalism that you were working on earlier in your career. How is it like with memoirs? Because I took a few classes in college and that was the only experience I had. Also for the school paper, they were really making it clear, like, you have to remain unbiased. You have to be very straightforward. Don't add any like fluffy words or descriptions. So do you feel like memoirs work best from your experience being unbiased about a situation where it's kind of like finding the truth in the situation in that way? Or do you mean more so your own truth where you can be biased?
I think you absolutely should not think of it as journalism. It is so emotional, and it's definitely everything is filtered through your lens, and that's what makes it interesting, is people want to put your shoes on and walk around. They want to see life through your perspective. So it's best if you don't try to be clinical and unbiased. I don't think that would help the writing at all.
This is something that I've struggled with, where I've been dabbling a little bit in my own writing for, I could say, like the last 10 years. And of course, it's just like never ever comes to fruition into a book. But there's always situations where, especially writers who want to write something that's inspired by life, but then turn into fiction. But then they get stuck and caught between, oh my gosh, how much of this can we add from our truths? But then, especially if it involves family members, how do we do it in a way that's respectful and not tearing families apart in a way if there are those certain subject matters? Did you come across any of those tricky situations?
That definitely came up a lot. I did my best to tell the truth about every person in my life, but it was also pretty scary because you want to make sure you're casting them in a good light, because you have to see them.
Yes, exactly.
And I do think there are people who will do a better job than I did, because I do think I was a little bit timid around that. A thing that kept coming up in my head was like the fact that my mom got cancer comes up in the book, but I don't go very far into it because I don't feel like it's my story to tell. I feel like it's hers.
Right.
Maybe one day she'll choose to tell it, or maybe not. Either case, I don't feel like it's really my territory. So anytime I felt like I was treading into that, I tried to stop and take a breath and think about, okay, I can talk about how my mom's cancer affected me, but I can't talk about my mom's cancer. Only she can. I don't know if that's the right thing to do, but that's what I did.
That's right for you. It's all different. Talking about your mom, Joanne, she is awesome and a warrior. She's probably like, wow, Yin is so aggressive up in here. She listens to your episode.
No, she'll love you. She's very enthusiastic. She's into it.
I think she and I could be besties. I also read your article about your mom and you beating cancer together for the New York Post. That was beautiful. Do you mind giving us a glimpse into that experience from your own truth when you first discovered that your mom had it as well? And then what was that like for you both coming out of it together? I don't want to give it away, but towards the end of the article, how she's influenced you by giving you her own advice with her own experience of how she dealt with it.
So I got cancer my freshman year around May. And by December, we had treated it and I was like heading back to school. And then my mom got cancer that same February, 2 months about after I had recovered. When I say recover, I just mean that my tests were clear, but like I was still bald and very much looking like a cancer patient. So I remember finding out when I was in my dorm, and I remember just being furious, which is a weird reaction, but I just felt really, really mad that we had to go through it again, and embarrassed in a weird way that we'd have to tell people, oh, remember that thing that happened and you guys like helped us out by like making us food and helping us pay our medical bills. Guess what? It's happening again. It just seemed so bizarre. And I felt weird making people feel weird. But we had to do it because she had cancer. And then I was away at school while she was going through a lot of her treatment. So that was also really hard because I knew exactly what she was going through, even though I couldn't be there physically for her. And I mean, that was like pretty distracting to be at school and to be like, oh, mom's at chemo right now. I remember exactly what that's like.
Yeah.
So that was rough. We each had Hodgkin's lymphoma, which is weird that we had the same cancer the same year, same family. Very unsettling. It's a cancer that is pretty treatable, and I think the standard treatment length is like 6 months. If she was diagnosed in February, she was probably done by July or August. By the time I was back from school, she was coming out of it, and things were looking good, and she's alive today and everything. One thing that really it shed a lot of light on is like that she and I like deal with hardship very differently. And I think I deal with it by keeping it to myself and trying to not alarm my family members by how hard it is. She does the exact opposite thing where she's just like, this is hard. She's a lot more emotional than I am. I'm very emotional, but I keep it inside or keep it private. She's a lot more publicly emotional. It was weird to see us go through the same thing and like how differently we both dealt with it. Not that one is more appropriate than the other. They're both like to each their own kind of thing.
So in the end, the way you mentioned that she dealt with it, the part that I was specifically referring to in your article was your mom was the one who encouraged you to speak to a therapist.
Yes.
And when I read that, I was like, that is so ironic because I feel like I've told my mom, you should maybe check out the therapist. Girl almost knocked me out my feet. Oh my God. Verbally, she threw daggers. You think I'm crazy? Oh my God. It's just, you know, the older generation, they think it's only crazy people that go in there. I'm like, no, like literally just talking your feelings and you can trust somebody. And I fucking love therapists. That's why
me
I'm like,
too.
Mom, I'm like, it is not an insult. It's the best shit ever.
I know. And it's like going to a spa. It's so luxurious. I love it so much.
Yes.
I am so grateful that my mom did encourage that. There was a free program through our hospital at Sloan Kettering that for caregivers and cancer survivors, they have free therapy. So she had started going.
Amazing.
It was about 3 years after I was better that I kept feeling these like same things coming up all the time.
Yeah.
And then I was about to start my job at BuzzFeed. And I had thought, oh, maybe I'm feeling this anxiety because I don't have a job yet. Then I just like started my job and it's like my dream job. And I'm like, oh, well, I'm still anxious. Like, this had nothing to do with me getting a job.
Yeah.
And that's when I realized, oh, I think this might have something to do with almost dying at the age of 19. So when my mom told me about her therapist, I was like, oh, maybe I'll go on my way to work since I work in New York now. And then I met Kimmery, my therapist, who I still go to this day. And she's incredible. And I feel so lucky to have her. And I know mental health care is such a luxury for someone.
Yes,
and
it
is. The fact that I get to go for free, I do not take that lightly. I understand how insane that is. And I cherish her so deeply. But I do encourage everybody, if you ever feel stressed out or sad or anxious, you can go to a person who will help you identify the things in your life who that might have made you feel that way. And then you can mm-hmm. work on removing them. And then you yeah. feel better. It's incredible. The best.
It's amazing. I'm personally not a fan of spas. I don't like that stuff at all. I could imagine it's like a spa. When you Same, were saying yeah. that earlier, I'm just like, yeah, I guess that's kind of like my girlfriend going to massage sessions and she's all about it, but I'm not. But I'm like, I guess that would be equal to my massage therapy. Like you mentioned, it's a luxury and it got so expensive that I had to stop.
Yeah, I believe it.
And I haven't gone back for a while. But if you find a good therapist, I can't even describe it. I had one where I literally every session I would fall asleep because he's oh. droning off and he looks like he's going to fall asleep. He's in the middle of saying, Yin, hello. Oh, sorry.
You're boring the crap out of me.
But my insurance covers it. The one before that, I had this lady who's not covered by insurance. It was like an arm and a leg every session. But know, my God. Crazy. It's horrible, but I come yeah. out every session feeling so elated. I've either had a crying session and feeling high as hell afterwards and so yeah. great, but now she got a baby and she's not going back to work. So I'm like, oh my God, of course.
You're like, I'm your baby. Let me come back.
I'm so happy for you to know that you have the same woman in your life that you can depend and trust on and rely on and that she's not going to go anywhere anytime soon. That's amazing. It's a free program that the hospital provides.
I know. Sloan's incredible. They really do have the best patient services, I think. Not that I've been to other hospitals, but I always feel so pampered and loved and supported there. They have great resources and focus groups and counseling, obviously, and I love going to the hospital.
I think that's pretty rare, right? When they actually follow up and they make sure that it's a well-rounded package where you are taken care of emotionally and psychologically, because a lot of places you're discharged and bye Felicia, never going to see you again.
Absolutely. And why isn't this standard for every hospital or every exactly. chronic illness? You absolutely need to take care of mind and body, in my opinion.
Yes.
And
yes.
like the two are so interconnected. It seems so weird to me that we just treat the body and leave the mind to be like, ravaged and rattled. It's like, horrible.
I have a friend who just had babies last year. I was reading her post on Facebook where she mentions that she used to go to therapy and it really helped her after having the babies. And now the insurance sees it as, it says that you're fine now, so we're not going to cover your therapy sessions anymore. I'm like, what? Are you serious? This is the system that we have. They're going to come in and tell you whether or not you need therapy or not. The reason why she's so healthy today yeah. and is able to be an amazing mom to her children, an amazing wife to her husband, an amazing human being and like kicking ass in her career is because of the therapist. Like a huge part of is because of the sessions. But to remove that afterward, it's not you learn the tools and all of a sudden you're, hey, I can go on doing everything
forever.
Now.
Yeah.
There's no 100% cure. This is emotions and mental state that you're talking about. I can go on for an hour, so I'm just going to stop right here. But I agree with you. I am thrilled to hear that the Sloan Kettering Center is on top of their shit with that. Thank you for sharing that about you and your mom, by the way. I love the stories about you and your man. Can you share how he's been there for you your entire time?
We met in high school and I got cancer when I was 19. So I guess like 3 years into our relationship. And sometimes I wonder if it's a glue that bonded us forever. He's 29 as of 2 weeks ago. He's just a super supportive partner and a really great dude. And he's not perfect. I really want to put that out there. Not to shit on him, but like he's a human being and he has his own shortcomings and his own anxieties.
We all do. It's yeah. really hard to find people who are stand-up human beings like him who are there. It's really it counts with the ones who show up. And he sounds like he's shown up all
oh,
those
yeah,
years.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Do you have a favorite story? Do you remember where you're like, okay, this guy is the one?
I feel like that's what that essay was that inspired the book, the 10 biggest moments that I could remember where I was, this dude is the best dude. And I'm so happy he's my dude. And when I think back about our relationship, like kind of amorphous, I do feel like his attitude toward going to the hospital when I was sick was always so strangely upbeat. He was excited to go. And it was for weird reasons. He really liked that they gave out free ginger ale. And he was like, oh, I really like when we get to play pool in the patient lounge. He just made it not shitty to have to go to treatment. Yeah. And treatment is so shitty. You get there at 10 a.m. It takes an hour to see the doctor. The doctor sees you for 15 minutes. And then you have to wait another 2 hours. And then for 3 hours, you're just sitting with an IV and they're like pumping the worst chemicals into your body that make you so sick that the room is spinning and you're throwing up. I never actually threw up, but I got really nauseous. That could be a really shitty thing to have to be like, oh, it's Tuesday, I have to go do that thing I fucking hate.
Yeah.
But Sean always made it seem there was like stuff to look forward to, like the ginger ale or the pool table on the roof, or the fact that it was in New York and we were living in New Jersey at the time. So it was like, oh, maybe we could go for a walk around Central Park before they call you for treatment, or maybe we could go to that diner you like. Just remember being, he makes shitty things fun, and that
and feels like an adventure with him.
Everything is fun with him. I always said, I think one way that I know that I like being with Sean is I would rather go to the post office with Sean than go to drinks with like people from work. Like, I'd rather do a boring.
That's a really great way to compare. I agree with you. That's the same way I feel about my girlfriends. I'd rather be at home talking about how big my shit is with my girlfriend than out with certain people dance.
Exactly. It's more fun to do weird, boring stuff than to do typically fun, exciting stuff. Then I think you found your person. I hope that's a sufficient answer.
Sean is amazing. I just want to give him the award of best boyfriend, even including human flaws and all, because we all have them. And girl, you too. He is very lucky to have you. Reading your story, how positive you are. You make us learn life lessons in a positive way.
Everything you've been saying, I'm so appreciative of all the kind things you have to say about the book. It's like amazing.
I only speak the truth. If it wasn't good, I do not mention it. That's the way I am. My mom is the same way. Like, my mom would be like, no, I don't like that friend. They're not coming over. I definitely got that side from her. If it's something that we definitely believe in, we will go on.
I love it. I wish you could call me every morning and just tell them. Right?
Hey, Erin, it's your morning call. How are you? It's 7 a.m. Just want to let you know you're fabulous and beautiful.
Oh, God, I love it. Time for work. I'm just like through the roof right now. This is so nice.
Sean's like, damn it, this woman will give me some competition right now. It's so exciting to hear your voice talking about this. And I know there's a lot of readers, even checking out their reviews about your book, they all feel like they're your best friend. How does that make you feel?
I love it.
You get these people coming on to you on Twitter. Hey, are we BFFs now? I'm pretty sure you have like a ton of that.
Yeah, but I'm like, can we actually get drinks? Can we actually meet up? My best friend lives in Boston. My other best friend lives in LA.
Oh, no.
My other best friend lives in England. I don't have like a good contingent of best friends here. So if anybody wants to actually hit me up and get drinks, I'm saying I'm down. I live in Queens. I work in Union Square. Hit me up.
Amazing. What kind of drinks do you like?
I like shitty beers. I hate to say
it.
I love a nice light beer. I love a beer that tastes like water. I'll drink 100 of them. Not literally. And especially on a hot day, is there anything better than like a, I'm going to say it, a Bud Light?
Oh my God. That's awesome. Hey, no judgment here, because my girlfriend is all about beers and she's about to open up a shop that's going to have craft beers.
I read that on your website. That's so cool.
She's so dope. You know, I told her I like your kind of beers too. She just looked at me blank stare and just walks away. I'm like, all right, no judgment, all right? No judgment.
Because you do not appreciate my taste at all.
It's nice to have easy to down beers. I'm learning to drink stouts and stuff like that, but I can't make my way towards stouts. We just went to...
Oh, really?
No, stouts are fucking heavy for me.
My favorite beer is a Guinness, though, even though, okay, like I like a cold beer.
I'm not a fan of coffee. I know, blasphemy. I'm not a fan of coffee, so I stay away from stouts because of that coffee note that feels too heavy for my tongue. My God, I sound so fucking bougie right now. It's too heavy for my tongue.
So
you know that coffee
note?
Are you a coffee fan?
So boring, but I stopped drinking caffeine because I realized it makes me like a worse person. For a while, I was drinking mint tea in the morning, but now that it's like summer, I just have water.
Have you tried chrysanthemum tea?
Oh my God, no, it sounds great.
It's so fucking good. Okay, do you like dim sum?
Yeah.
You don't sound very confident when you say that.
For a second, I was like, do I know what dim sum is? And I was like, it's the noodles, right? Is it? I'm like Googling it.
Usually in New York City, they'll have carts that go around. They look like Asian tapas, but it's brunch style, and it's super yummy, but super oily, and it makes you take a dump real quick right after you eat if you're on an empty stomach. It's great for detoxing in a weird way. When you have dim sum, they usually come with chrysanthemum tea. Dim sum is kind of big in Chinatown, New York City. So if you ever hit it up, you should ask for chrysanthemum tea there.
Awesome.
And it's so good and it's caffeine free. And
yes,
I feel like
it.
You might like it. My girlfriend's brother stays away from caffeine, but he likes the herbal types.
Yeah, same.
I swear by it. So please check it out.
I literally will check it out.
I'm all about tea recommendations and all that stuff. I'm telling you, I get so crazy about it. You have been amazing, Erin. And do you mind letting listeners know where to find you?
I'm happy to. You can follow me on Twitter at Erin Chack and Instagram is Erin.Chack. And you can see my work on BuzzFeed at buzzfeed.com/Erin Chack.
Erin, you've been so phenomenal.
Right back at you.
And that wraps up our episode with the ridiculously awesome Erin Check. Erin, as you know already, I loved having you on the show and clicking with you right away. Thank you so much for being so fun. Storytellers, I hope you all had the best time listening to Erin's episode. I am so grateful for your support and thank you for hanging out with us every week. Please say hi to Erin on Twitter at Erin Check and head over to her show notes page at 88cupsoftea.com/podcast/Erin Check. At the top of the show, I talked about Overdrive and their new app, Libby. I've been a huge fan of Overdrive for 6 years. I first discovered them when I moved into my own place for the first time ever and needed a positive distraction after a breakup. The library down the block from me had these pamphlets about Overdrive that explained how to borrow ebooks and audiobooks with my library card. I was obsessed and started borrowing audiobooks back to back, starting off with some self-help books to give me a boost during the breakup. Fast forward 6 years, I am super happy and have grown a lot as a person. And it's awesome to see that Overdrive has gone the same direction in terms of growth and expansion, and now has Libby, their brand new app they built with a lot of love. The app was designed to get people reading as quickly and seamlessly as possible, and this was all inspired by user and library feedback. So think of Libby like a librarian in your pocket. She's a one-tap reading app from your library and Overdrive. While millions of people around the world use their library to read books every day with Overdrive, half of the United States alone doesn't have a library card. Overdrive wants to change that with Libby. Libby has also been designed to recommend awesome books to read next. I couldn't be more proud to collaborate with a team that exists to spread literacy, reading, and libraries. Be sure to download Libby on your phone or tablet and rediscover the magic of libraries. Head over to meet.libbyapp.com. And don't forget to join our Facebook group if you're looking for an intimate community for storytellers where you can check in about your writing and hang out with other writers at facebook.com/groups/88cupsoftea. I can't wait to meet you in there. That's facebook.com/groups/88cupsoftea. Have an amazing rest of your week and I'll catch you in the next episode.
Hey guys, it's me again. Thanks so much for listening in on 88 Cups of Tea. Go create something magical today, and I'll catch you in the next episode. Bye!